B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
We have mixers.
The Gwinnett and Mount.
Yes.
When is the game?
Tomorrow night.
Yeah. I said where?
William Tennant High School. It's out by Mark. Mark's neck
Warmester.
Of the woods.
Yeah, oh, Warmester. Okay. It's only like a 7-hour drive from where you are in South Jersey. Don't you worry.
You know what, Trey? Never mind.
Yeah.
Much of a drive.
All right. Legit, maybe like 45 to an hour. Like an hour. I think it's like an hour from where you'll be. Probably that time of day, actually, though. It probably is more like 3 hours.
Yeah.
From where you're coming from, brother. But yeah, any color analyst advice you can give us, Trey?
No, I've never done it.
That's what I thought. Okay. How about just go get some, like Andre Dillon? Just go get some. Bob, have you ever done color analyst things?
I don't think so. Not that I recall, no.
Yeah, neither have I. I think I am going to go with the Monday Night Football type blazer, though.
Nice.
I'll probably just wear my old wood uniform.
You should do that.
There we go. Gino in Kennett Square, what's going on, man?
How you guys doing this morning?
Good, bud.
So, yeah, you were talking earlier about Carson, and I think he's, in my opinion anyway, he's getting off the hook a little bit. Like, some of the blame, especially in the three losses, has got to be, you know, going to him. And even in just the season in general, how the team's playing, he's got to be partly responsible for your slow starts in the first half. I don't think they scored more than 10 points in the first half this year, outside of the Jets game.
Uh-huh.
And he's just looked ordinary in the first quarter, especially. And then in the fourth quarter, he looks downright bad at times. And some of the comebacks you're trying to complete, I get Nelson drops the ball against Atlanta, but Carson gets the ball back in his hands. The drive stalls at the end of the game. Against Detroit, I get J.J. Arcega drops a contested pass along the goal line at the end of the game. But you're in fourth and forever right near midfield because your Carson contributes to that. Against Minnesota, you have a slow start. Then he gets a chance late in the first half twice to go down and score a touchdown. He doesn't do it. He gets the ball back early in the second half against Minnesota, right near midfield, chance to tie the game. Doesn't do it. He's being sucky in selective spots. And when your quarterback is supposed to be elite, you can't have that. And the other red flag that kind of goes off for me, we're saying the receivers need to step up for him. When you're the elite quarterback, you make your receivers better. Like Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, and I know those are the elite of the elite.
Yeah, sure.
I know I'm overstepping the boundary there. But they find a way to make their receivers get open. They find a way to do it. And I had a question for Trey. Like, you watched the film. Is Carson finding the open receivers? Like, I understand he may not have as much time as we want, but is he not utilizing the time that he has the best way he can and not reading the defense properly and finding the guy? So, for me, Carson's got to have some of this blame with these slow starts.
He's not exempt, Gino, and we'll let Trey answer your question, but he's not exempt. And the thing I had an issue with was whether or not, like, the biggest game I thought Carson had such an effect on was, it was the drop game, right? That eight drops in the game. But there are two specific throws at home against the Lions that I thought he had to make. One was Mac Hollins in the end zone that he threw behind him, and the other was Nelson Agholor down the sideline that was not a deep ball that had to be tracked. It was a ball to him that was thrown in his direction that was not deep, and he just overthrew the guy again, and that was an issue there. The other thing was he threw behind Miles Sanders a couple times. But, Trey, to answer the man's question, when you talk about Carson Wentz and his impact on this game, what do you look at?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes... Is he missing guys? Yeah, of course. I think sometimes you miss a guy here and there with that could have been open. But I also think, too, that, I mean, your receivers got to catch the ball.
Yeah, they can't catch the ball for the quarterback.
He puts the ball in play. They have to come down with the ball. I mean, you know, when you're looking at Mac Hollins not catching one in the end zone, or Thega Whiteside not catching one in the end zone, Nelly not catching one that's going down the field that would have been a score. You have too many times where the receivers just aren't making the plays. And also, too, they struggle to get open. You know, the secondary has no problem covering these guys, especially when you don't have any speed out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean...
So where's the trusting in Alshon?
Because
Alshon goes up and gets it.
Well, for some reason, they decided to run a bunch of screen passes for him last week, which made no sense to me because Alshon is not a burner.
Not at all. And does he look slower this year to you guys?
Oh, he's still injured. He's got the calf thing,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, he just seems to be like a lumbering tight end anymore.
But to Geno's point, they're worse in the league in contested catch rate. They lead the league in drops. As Giselle once said, Tommy can't catch it and throw it himself.
Right.
Like, is he perfect? No, but nobody is. Like, he needs some help.
As a quarterback, and we'll talk to Jaws about this, but as a quarterback, what are you supposed to do to help your players catch the ball?
But stick them on their gloves?
Softer throws?
I guess.
Like, there was one throw.
I don't know.
There was one throw that crossed my mind about just maybe putting a little bit more touch on the football, and that was the throw to Mac Hollins in the corner of the end zone against the Vikings last weekend. But Mac got, I think, one hand up on the ball.
Well, he shouldn't even be on the field.
I agree with you, but look, we're grasping at straws here to say if there is anything Carson can do, would that be one throw that maybe he puts a little better touch on and the receiver comes down with it? But overall, when you do lead the league in drops, as his receivers do, Jamie, as you've pointed out many times, I don't know what he can do to make those guys
not
better.
Not much. I mean, did you see the play last week where Patrick Mahomes, the first touchdown to Tyreek Hill? It wasn't a beautiful ball by any means.
No.
He threw it up to the goal line, and Tyreek Hill went up and got it amongst two defensive backs.
Two defensive backs.
Then scored.
Yeah, and scored. It was like a 70-inch vertical.
Yeah.
And he jumped over the moon and caught the ball and also scored.
Imagine if he had playmaking ability like that. Like Carson Wentz, it's a totally different tune this year.
He had a defender in front of him and behind him.
And he said, give me that.
Let me get that.
He threw it up, and his guy made a play.
Yeah, it was just like a jump ball play.
I still think Alshon Jeffrey is a guy you can throw the football up to, and he can make a play.
Then why aren't we seeing it?
But I don't know. But wait, what?
It's not fast.
Well, I understand that. Yeah. But I'm saying if he's at least a guy that can run down the field, as we have seen him do, why can't he be a guy to run down the field and go up and get that jump ball? Carson said he has to realize that Alshon's always open. He said that after the Green Bay game. Alshon's always open. I got to realize that I can throw the ball up to him and he can come down with it. That's why that throw that Alshon got interfered with in Green Bay down the sideline, Carson said, hey, I got to leave that up for you. They even mic'd him up during the game and he said the same thing to him. I got to be able to trust you where you can go up and get it. I got to almost lead a receiver. Like you would lead a receiver down the field. He's almost got to lead him vertically to go up and get the ball.
Yeah, to me, it seems like Alshon, now he had the one nice pass play down the sideline to him, right, where it was a beautiful throw, and some people are wondering if it should have been more inside, and did Alshon not take the right route? Could have been a touchdown, whatever. But to me, every throw to Alshon Jeffrey seems to be 15 and in anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
I mean, there's no... go up and get it isn't happening 25 yards down the field. Go up and get it is happening 12 to 15 yards down the field.
They feel like a 15-yard offense.
It really does. Yeah. Like, it's really hitting me more and more and more. Mm-hmm. What a sit-down offense this is.
Like, you know how a lot of times, like, DeSean Jackson is the guy that we would talk about this all the time. Because they get in the red zone, and all of a sudden, DeSean Jackson is non-existent. They're too compact, right? There's not enough space for him to use that speed. It feels like the Eagles are always in, not even the red zone, like a 15-yard type of red zone.
Yeah.
Where it's like a dead zone right now for their offense where they can get nothing going. And that's why I want to see, and we'll get into this in a minute, because Zach Ertz talked about this yesterday in the locker room, about getting out to a fast start. And I don't mean a play action fake and you're bombing the ball down the field. I mean drop back, ball's gone. And Trey, you said they counteract that with man coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get that that's a great mismatch for the defense, but man, there is some point where you do have to look at Carson Wentz as an elite quarterback and say, all right, make things happen. If guys are going to keep dropping it, guys are going to keep dropping it, but you have to get rid of the ball quick. You have to make the decision. You have to make the right read. If you got to check down, you check down. If you see a guy like Eric Kendricks start to cheat over on a screen play to Alshon Jeffrey, you got to get out of that play, especially if there's enough time left on the clock, and you have to make that. Sooner or later, when you have an elite quarterback, it's to hell with everything else, and you win anyway because you have that guy.
Now, you got to understand, too, now, sometimes plays are called, and there is no option.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, I don't, you know, we've gone back to that play a couple times where I know he probably should have checked out of that, but you don't know if Doug said, hey, no matter what, run it.
So, that's dumb to me.
Listen.
Yeah. I mean, Trey, what the hell are you doing? Why are you telling Doug to not run?
I mean, I'm just saying. Right. Sometimes it's like, hey, run it. No matter what, run it.
No. Not going to do it.
Or it's a timeout.
Well, Trey, should he have more freedom at the line?
Do you want to give a throwing quarterback freedom at the line all the time?
I think I trust his intelligence enough to do the right thing.
He's going
to
throw every time.
Trey, now I haven't been totally honest with you.
Yeah.
All right, in my one year of organized football, especially for high school, I was a quarterback.
Okay,
for one game, I was the backup quarterback. I was still a quarterback.
Yeah,
but I knew to check out of that play because Eric Kendricks was going, oh, hey, I know what you're doing. Because I knew what was happening on that play. I knew the play being called. Anybody who played a game of Madden in their life knew what play was coming right there.
Yeah.
I think that was the play that Carson could have said, oh, this is a bad idea.
Yeah.
And if you're going to have options on your scripted plays in the first 15 plays of the game, why not have a little bit more freedom later in the game, especially when they've seen a little bit of your game plan and they know what direction you're going anyway?
Yeah. Now, when you say, okay, should he have more freedom at the line of scrimmage?
I'm not saying call his own plays or anything. Yeah, he's not Peyton Manning.
At the end of the day, that's what you want him to be.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, right? there is no more dangerous quarterback than someone that has the entire playbook right there on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, coach quarterback is deadly.
Yeah, I mean, that's deadly, but
if they know what they're doing.
But you have to make sure, yeah, they need to know what they're doing, and also, too, you need to make sure that your offensive line knows what's going on. So that would mean that he and Kelsey need to be, like, paired, tied at the hip. They need to be feeling it.
I still like a big mix. I don't like Peyton Manning. I think that's actually a detriment of Peyton Manning's game. Why he didn't win more Super Bowls is because he had control over everything. Like, I don't like that. I like having that bird's eye view and that input. I think Peyton made too many decisions in that offense.
Sure, just like analytics. The more you know, the better.
Yeah,
not that it rules your day. Mm-hmm. So, like you're saying, Peyton Manning, his day shouldn't be ruled by him calling everything.
Right.
The more information he has, the better. So let somebody else see it some way or another.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see a little more of Carson Wentz ad-libbing a little bit because I think that's when he was at his best.
Yeah.
In 17 and even a little bit last year when he gets go. But I agree with you, Mark. It can't be solely that.
Yeah.
So there's got to be a mix that they need to find. They just haven't seemed to have found it yet.
And I don't mean to take anything away from Peyton Manning. I just think that one guy shouldn't have all that control.
Sure. And
it should
be
more of a balance.
Yeah. Do it.
And it works when you're in no huddle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can do something like that. But, I mean, even Tom Brady is sitting in there like, all right, what play are we running? But then when he gets up to the line of scrimmage, he's like, all right, you're done now. I got this all in control.
Exactly, yeah. I hate that this is the guy that jumps out to me, but it's the guy I saw do it the most. Like, there's little hand signals that quarterbacks would have with receivers if they saw something. It wouldn't necessarily be changing the whole play. It might be changing a route and letting somebody know that either he's going to be the hot route or, hey, instead of running that in, I want you to run that deep route. And I would see Tony Romo do it with Jason Witten a lot, mm-hmm. where he literally would just, he'd see something in the defense, he'd turn to Jason Witten, he'd just put his hand down, and he'd wiggle his hand. That's all he would do. And that meant Jason Witten was just to run a go route instead of run like a five and in.
When you have God at wide receiver, I mean at tight end, it's not that hard.
Right. But, hey, Zach Ertz said something yesterday in the locker room that has, I think, been a big request of a lot of Eagles fans of this offense. And there's one challenge the Eagles are going to have on the road in this game that they have to check off the list if they're going to win. If they're going to win, they're going to have to do this one particular thing. We'll tell you what that is in just a second. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. Michael K. coming up at 9 o'clock here on 97.5. The Finale.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
Damn good. We're gonna rock that 10 mode. We're gonna get back to the 10. Back in Philly though. Feel me?
I'm not feeling too good about that 10 mode, unfortunately, with Deshaun Jackson. Missing another week now? We were looking forward to
Sunday.
Yeah,
I think he's gonna miss it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's in this.
That's not a good one. That's not a good one. But you know what? This is the one thing, as I was saying before the break, that the Eagles have to do if they're going to win this game on Sunday. It's something they haven't done all season long. Can I get at least 1 point, maybe a field goal in the first quarter?
Stop being so greedy. They average 2.8 points a first quarter, Mark.
That's all season.
What do you want, like 7?
That's all season, though.
Yeah.
I'm talking about on the road, they have not scored a single point. Not one in the first quarter in a game.
Is that bad?
I don't like analytics, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you. When you don't score, you have a less likely, you're less likely to win the game.
All right, what's the first thing you do to try to stop that streak, Mark?
To stop that streak?
Yeah, what do you do?
You got to throw.
All right, what else? Come
on, be able to move the football. Think deeper.
Deeper.
Actually, Dallas doesn't show up.
Get the ball first.
Oh, take the yes. Don't
take
defer. Don't defer.
Take the ball. Dallas gets the wins the coin toss. They'll defer. They'll give you the ball.
You
win the coin toss. Take the ball.
You need that rhythm. You need to establish some kind of rhythm.
God, change something up. Deferring hasn't worked.
That's
giving
a good point.
The other team the ball puts you in a deficit right away every game this year. Don't do it.
And Doug Peterson said he's not going to defer anymore. He said it tongue-in-cheek.
He was joking.
It was very tongue-in-cheek. But
I didn't find it funny.
I was not laughing even a little bit.
I was appalled, actually.
But he said earlier in the week that they're not going to defer. Whatever. You're on the road. You're going to get an opportunity to get that ball. If you win that coin toss, you take that ball, you march downfield. You set the tone right out of the gate.
The funny thing is, it's like it's a joke, you know? And I brought it up a few weeks ago. I was just like, I would take the ball because it's not working. They're getting behind in every game. And he says, that's a big thing. Sure, we'll defer. We'll take the ball. Like, it is a big thing.
Yes.
No, not for nothing. You're falling behind every game. It rules how now you have to run your offense that first series because, like it or not, you are playing from behind. It is a big thing. It sets a tone, like you said, Mark. And I hear what Trey said, and Trey is, you know, spot on that adrenaline that you have starting a game, it's better to have that defense on the field. I hear you love it and all that. It just doesn't work for this Eagles team right now. So try to change it. Why would you not try to change something that doesn't work?
Well, like the frustration of not getting Jalen Ramsey, this subject has also hit the locker room. Because Zach Ertz was asked about it yesterday, and he was asked basically about just getting started in these games and what they could do to get that ball rolling forward. Here's Zach Ertz yesterday.
Well, slow starts, we got to play better for sure. In the first quarter, got to put up some points. Last game was pretty unique. I think we only had like 3 or 5 plays as an offense in the first quarter, and 3 and out on the first drive is not ideal by any means, especially when you're scripting out supposedly your best plays for the game plan. You want to start fast. Seems like once we get in a rhythm, we're going. It's kind of been a theme this year that once we find rhythm, we're a tough offense to stop. Just getting in that groove early is the key, and we got to find a way to do that.
Yeah, I can't remember too many times where the offense looked like in rhythm. Like the Packers game, they hit a couple of strides.
Mm-hmm.
That was good. Redskins? Kind of. I mean, the deep ball, I wouldn't necessarily call it a rhythm. They had DeSean Jackson flying down the field for themselves. So
I was going to say, the first half, they were ass.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
22 minutes, they were awful in that game.
Yeah.
Because the first quarter, they were bad. And then about 6 minutes left in the first half is when they hit DeSean Jackson for that first 50-plus yard touchdown.
Yeah.
Rhythm? Haven't really seen that. I need, look, a lot of this has to come down to the receivers catching the football. But other than that, I know a lot of people will look at this and say, I do want to see Carson just say, forget all that. I'm going to take you. No matter what happens, I got you. That type of thing. If the receivers are dropping balls left and right, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do.
And if Andre Dillard isn't holding his block at the left tackle position, that ain't going to happen either.
Mm.
But if you can get rid of the football fast, establish a rhythm offensively, get the run game going a little bit, incorporate that, maybe a little some screen games. Like I love seeing that incorporated. I don't like seeing it incorporated so much with Alshon Jeffrey, more so to Miles Sanders. Miles Sanders has shown you that he can be your big impact, instant offense type of guy. Not like DeSean Jackson by any means, but he's a guy that can all of a sudden get you a 30-yard reception. He seems to have that timing down perfectly with Carson Wentz. His hands seem to be pretty sure of themselves, right? That's not something you can say about too many guys on this offense so far this year. Why not get some blockers out in front of him? See if he can get even more yards there. That's what I want to see this offense do. They have to have some type of rhythm if they are going to win this game. And they're only going to establish that coming out early, establishing that in the first quarter, and putting some points on the board. That's how I feel about this offense.
And Ertz makes a great point. They ran 7 plays in the first quarter the other day.
Mm-hmm.
3 and out in the first series, and then 4 more starting into their second series before it was the end of the first quarter. 7 plays. You can't establish Jack Diddley in 7 plays. No, you can't. You can't, and especially when you went 3 and out on 3 runs in your first series. So, yeah, you know, you had Dallas had the ball for almost 8 minutes to start the game. 8 minutes. Trey, you talk about the adrenaline that you have to start a game. How much does that drain you when the other team has it for 8 minutes to start the game?
Yeah.
Both sides, right?
Yeah, both sides. I mean, because it's draining the defense, because it takes a little time to get diddly going.
Jason just tweeted it in, and it did jump out to me in the Zach Ertz comment we just played.
What's that?
Supposedly?
Wait, oh yeah.
When these first 15 plays are supposedly your best.
Uh-huh.
Ooh.
It's a big word there.
It is a big word.
Huh.
Supposedly, huh? Mm. I think he just basically said the first 15 plays suck. If I'm reading if I'm reading real deep into it,
uh-huh.
He doesn't think the first 15 plays they're running are their best.
Why they're not executing?
Yeah, I took it more as on me, as or on us, as opposed to on the coaches.
Yeah.
Okay, hit it again. Now there's debate. Hit it again. Zach Ertz yesterday in the locker room asked about fast starts of the offense.
Well, slow starts, we got to play better for sure. In the first quarter, got to put up some points. Last game was pretty unique. I think we only had like 3 or 5 plays as an offense in the first quarter, and 3 and out on the first drive is not ideal by any means, especially when you're scripting out supposedly your best plays for the game plan.
No, that was on the coaching staff.
Yeah, I think.
Wow,
I think he's saying like our first 15 sucks. To be honest with you, that's the way I interpret it.
Yeah, the way he said it when you're scripting out supposedly our best 15.
See, you're,
I mean,
you're
that
putting,
pause there.
You
was,
put a
that
little
was,
stink on supposedly.
I didn't hear that much stank.
Not
yes,
stank,
you did.
But
you did.
Heavy meaning.
Bob have stankified it more. There was more stank with Bob than there was with Zach.
You want to hear it again?
I need to hear.
You're going to get
all right,
it
hold
this
on.
Time.
Trey, you speak player. What's he saying here? Hit it again one more time.
Like supposedly.
By any means, especially when you're scripting out, supposedly your best plays for the game plan, you want to start fast.
Yeah. Coaching staff, better job.
Trey?
I hear it just like you guys hear it.
But we're hearing two different things. I'm hearing supposedly, like, yeah, because we're not executing these plays, and Bob and Jamie are hearing more of the, yeah, supposedly our best plays. Like, they're hearing supposedly. They're hearing, well, scripting out our Doug's an idiot plays. That's what they're hearing.
Yeah, I just heard supposedly.
Yeah, but what does it supposedly mean, Trey?
I don't know. Supposedly.
It's real deep diving into a comment. Yeah. I understand that, but part of me thinks he doesn't like their first 15.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we got to wait for Jacina Anderson to come
because
out with a tweet.
Because then he circles it back again saying, yeah, later in the game when we get into a rhythm. He's basically saying the first 15, there's no rhythm to it.
Yeah, Mark.
Is that their fault as the player, or is that their fault as the coaching staff?
I think he
staff?
Hit it behind while we have to execute, but yeah. There's no rhythm.
I don't think he's a big fan of the first 15 play. And he also backed it up by saying, you know, 3 and out the first series. Well, those were 3 runs. He's a tight end, pass-catching tight end.
Yes. And the tight ends had no part of the game for, like, the first quarter and a half.
Ertz was invisible in the first
And it's been
half.
2 years of first-quarter assery. And he knows that.
If we know
it.
Badgering Mark.
Is it, yeah, really.
He knows it. They know it. Admit it, Mark.
I didn't script the plays, guys.
But he knows.
He
knows
a better
they suck.
Job.
I'm a little freaked out.
He basically said, I miss Frank Reich.
I
miss your musk. I miss just being with you.
I think if you play it backwards, you hear Doug Peterson sucks. I think if you play it backwards, you hear Doug Peterson sucks. Let's get to Hawk in Northeast. What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up? Let me take you off Bluetooth. Yeah, hello? Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear, brother. What's up?
Yeah, normally I don't call in, man, and, you know, complain anything like that. But as far as you're killing me this morning.
What happened?
Hey, Trey, man, we're going to have to talk some football. Man, I darn near crashed the car on my way into work, man, listening to you, man. When we talk about Carson, you talk about Carson, okay? When you say Carson is coming to the line of scrimmage, he has to see something. Trey, can you confirm everything that I'm saying? To your partner, when you walk to the line, when Carson comes to the line of scrimmage, and you said he needs to see something. We have to get the safety's attention. Okay, what Doug is doing with Miles Sanders, you're saying that Miles Sanders needs to be in the game. Miles Sanders, we need some way to get the safety to come down and run support. Like when you saw Rodney McLeod close to the line of scrimmage, so that like right that's because. He's worried about the running back.
What the hell are you talking, Hawk? What the hell are you talking about?
Let me say this.
You're talking about five different points here. Let's talk about Carson Wentz.
But let me get okay. You talk about Carson. When Carson comes to the line of scrimmage, okay, the Eagles we need to get the safety's attention to get that strong safety to come down in the box, okay, so that we can get some type of running lanes. If you're not getting that safety to move, like you have to have another deep guy to take the top safety off. Miles Sanders is getting tackled by defenders who are not even in defensive positions to make a tackle. Defenders are standing straight up and tackling Miles Sanders. We need to get the safeties to start moving around so that when Carson sees what he wants, he can then start to get like some man-to-man with a receiver or start to call checkdowns or anything, checkdowns or something that might work. But right now, the safeties are just sitting because there's no kind of attention being drawn to the safeties. That's what the coverage, that dictates what Carson is seeing. And right now, the safeties don't have to come down.
Nobody has said anything to the contrary of that. I don't know what point you're arguing.
Because to me, when you say that Carson needs to get something, we need to be beating the drum more for Doug to get Jordan Howard or some kind of rhythm with them to come out and dictate, because we're not dictating anything. And the teams, that's why when you come out, you go three and out.
Right, Hawk, that drum for Jordan Howard is worn out. Like, that's how much we've been beating that in the first five games of the season. The only thing that I said about Carson seeing something in the defense was the reference to Eric Kendricks starting to slide over to Alshon Jeffrey the third time they ran that screen play to him. Carson has to see that there was enough time left on the clock and he has to check out of it. That's the only thing I said about Carson seeing anything in the defense.
But it starts with Doug. What I'm saying is that it's Doug. It's not Carson by saying, oh, Carson, you have to do something. No, you have to get some sort of running back in there who can break arm tackles. When you run between the tackles,
well, that's
you
not going to happen.
Hold on. You have to neutralize the linebackers.
Uh-huh.
The linebackers are not being neutralized to make that strong safety have to come up and play that robber position or whatever. He's just roaming free. So that's been he's allowed to double-team Zach Ertz. He's double-teaming Dallas Goddard. They're running rush after your defense.
Okay,
what you're saying is kind of like what teams are doing to us and by making Malcolm Jenkins come up and play on the line of scrimmage.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you get single high safety, and then Sidney Jones and Rasul Douglas are on an island. This is the difference. You have to swear with one of the principles. I can't get into it because I don't have enough time. But there are principles to playing winning football. There are principles to playing winning football, and one of them is controlling the safeties and getting that strong safety to move.
Right, but you started out by trying to correct me on something. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, because you need to be saying what Doug needs to try to employ or tries to put on the field. It's really not Carson. Doug is tying Carson's hands because the same personnel, they've gotten away from the personnel.
I haven't been complimentary of Doug Peterson.
I know you haven't, but they've gotten away from what skill set should take precedence over another skill set by saying this is the most talent. Miles Sanders is a third down running back right now. He's not the kind of running back to help come out to dictate anything. And if you put that with Jim Schwartz's defense, his scheme, he's given up the easy passes that allows a mediocre quarterback to find a rhythm.
That part of it's true. Yeah, but B-Hawk, we got to run here. And thanks for the call, man.
My head's spinning.
He was all over the place. I thought he was going to try to correct me on it. You can't. There's like, it's not even like an opinion. It's just like a duh moment that you got to get away from that play when you see the linebacker starting to shade over. That's the only thing I said about Carson in the defense.
Okay.
And I think most people would agree with that. But as far as Doug Peterson's play calling, I have not necessarily applauded that. And yeah, the offenses are picking apart your defense because Jim Schwartz is playing so far off the line. He's having his guys so far off the line of scrimmage. That's why you're able to get rid of the football in those 2.5 seconds. And that's why Derek Barnett and guys like Brandon Graham can't get to the quarterback. But everything else, like, I don't know what the other argument was. Like, he called trying to shoot something down, and I don't get it. Okay. But what did you get out of it?
Well, pretty much what he was saying was that kind of how teams are playing us. You know, when they can come out there and dictate the run, where they're using the run to make you bring the safeties down, where they can get the way it looks. Especially when you go out there against Minnesota, you see Malcolm Jenkins a lot of times closer to the line of scrimmage, which is leading to a single safety high,
My question is why is the run defense not good enough to do it on their own without Malcolm down low?
You bring him into the box a lot.
I know they do.
Especially
but do they need
nickel?
To be right now when the bigger hole is the secondary? Shouldn't they want more safety help in the back right now?
You would think, but I mean, a lot of those, like, especially when you look at some of those big plays that were in Minnesota, they'll play action.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it was.
And I know he takes tight ends a lot too and stuff, but. It just seems to me like I think the run defense should be good enough to survive without Malcolm down in the box right now.
So that means that you need to have, for you to not bring Malcolm down, then now that means that your linebackers have to be extremely good.
Okay, so here you go.
So Minnesota doesn't have to do that because you
have
some extremely
athletic,
you have some extremely athletic linebackers.
Enter Alex Singleton.
Bye-bye, what? Zach Brown, Alex Singleton, not one of your linebackers. Camus Grugier-Hill.
He's
Nigel
back.
Bradham,
he's ready.
If he's healthy, I don't even know.
Yeah, we don't even know where he is.
All these guys.
They said he's day-to-day, so I'm assuming he'll play.
No, but what
he's seminal. He's tough.
No, but what I'm doing is...
spit on it.
Rub some dirt, some alligator blood, and it'll be good to go.
Yeah.
But, Trey, to your point, that's why they have to keep those guys up in the box. That's what especially Malcolm
Jenkins. But can they get away with not doing that?
I don't think so.
Well,
like even without Amari Cooper, who Adam Schefter told us yesterday is not supposed to play, right? Even without him, you're still talking about an offense that has tallied up a lot of yards, second in the NFC right now in yards. A lot of that comes from Ezekiel Elliott, we know, but that's a huge threat to your secondary as well. If you're not going to have those guys play up, then Ezekiel Elliott's going to have a skill.
I hear you, but the 30,000 foot view is the one thing this team does great is run defense.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's what they do great, take your chances without Malcolm and help the most exposed part of the team, which is the secondary.
Are they hiding his weakness? Is it a case that, and you brought this up.
I think Malcolm's come back to earth.
Maybe his weakness is coverage now. Although they want him on the field, and they have him on the field, they're putting him in the spot where he can best shine. And that seems to be in the box, Trey. So my question to you is, can you make him one of those extra, in air quotes here, linebackers and bring in some more defensive help? Can you go with two different safeties, two corners, and bring him in the box all the time?
Now, you don't want him taking on linemen.
Yeah, but what's he doing if he's in the box all the time?
Because if you make him an extra linebacker, then now that means that he's taking on linemen.
He's that second-level lineman. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
what's he taking on now in the box? Is it such a surprise that it's a freelance type of thing?
He's slipping inside of receivers. He's dealing with tight ends that might be trying to go up to block him.
Tight end and quick-hitting routes.
Yeah, receivers that might be trying to come up to block him to stop him for the run. But now if you put him inside like a regular inside linebacker, then now he's dealing with guards and tackles that's coming up to take care of him.
He's too light for that.
I don't want to put that punishment on him.
All right. Yeah. Coming up, we'll let you hear again what Jacinda Anderson tweeted out yesterday, because the frustration with Jalen Ramsey from yesterday that we all had evidently made its way into the Eagles locker room. So a player apparently reached out to Jacinda Anderson to voice his frustrations about not improving the secondary immediately by acquiring Jalen Ramsey. We'll get to that in a second. It's a tweet from Jacinda Anderson from last night. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. Then we got John, we got Tyree, Ike, Joe yesterday right there. We got open lines after that. 610-632-0975. Time of the Fanatic is 840.
Farsetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
8 o'clock hour brought to you by Martin Law, the law firm for injured workers. Visit paworkinjury.com. So the rage from people did boil into the locker room, evidently, about Jalen Ramsey. I'll read you Jacinda Anderson's tweet in a second, but John's been holding here. He wants to talk some birds. What's up, John?
What's going on, fellas? Can you hear me?
You got you, man.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, man, stop with that deferring stuff, man. Deferring is a good thing, bro. There's only one consistent that you know in football, is that you don't know how the first half is going to go. So deferring to the second half gives you a better opportunity, because you don't know if you're down, you need the ball.
Yeah, because giving them the ball in the first half has been a real good opportunity so far.
I understand that. It's just because it hasn't worked doesn't mean it doesn't work. You know what I'm saying?
No. I don't know what you're saying at all.
We need to score. We need to score.
You can't do it when the other team has the ball first.
And just because the team scores doesn't mean that's going to dictate what we do on offense when we get out there for our series. That has nothing to do with it. The defense does need to get out there and stop them, most definitely. And
they haven't done it. I'm not going to die on this hill, John, but they haven't done it. So the thing in sports is, if you haven't done one thing, try something else, right?
No doubt.
I'd just give it a try.
I wouldn't.
Okay.
What I would say is, just team-wise, just me overall, what I think team-wise is, they're just not firing on all cylinders, and Doug is making simple mistakes. Like, you can't let analytics always take over a game. Sometimes you got to play by feel. Like, he should have called a timeout. Even if Carson didn't see it, he should have called a timeout when the play clock was running down instead of taking that penalty. You know what I'm saying? Because that was an important time in the game. We needed that. And then on the other thing, as far as people getting on Carson, our wide receivers need to make some plays.
Yes.
Now, I understand that we short DeSean Jackson, but when it's 3rd and 10, I can't remember what drive it was, but we needed that score. And Alshon Jeffrey, he got to come up with that ball. Like, we lost to Detroit because Detroit's wide receiver made a great play on the sideline. I can't think of the wide receiver's name right now. He used to play for New England. But he made that 3rd and 10 on Rasul. He caught that pass on the sideline. He had to go up and get that ball at the end of the game and make that catch. That was a great catch. We need our receivers to do that for our quarterback at some point in time.
Yeah, John, John, that's what I'm saying about this game. This has to be the game where you throw all that out the window. You got, like, focus has to be at an all-time high, or at least an all-season high for this team. Mm-hmm. And the playmaking ability that these, like, Alshon Jeffrey has that playmaking ability. I think Dallas Goedert has it. I think Zach Ertz has certainly proved to you last year that he could be one of the best tight ends in the game. Those three receivers, and like Nelson Agholor, just don't hurt the team. That's all I'm asking. Just don't hurt the team.
How bad does that sound?
Just do, it's awful. Just do something that's maybe positive. One or two decent catches. No drops, please.
He sucks.
Okay,
I'm done. There's no game that can convince me to come back.
But the main three targets he should have are his two tight ends and Alshon Jeffrey. Let me see them as part of the game plan. And then Miles Sanders out of the backfield.
Yeah, I'll throw him in there, too.
Absolutely. Those are the three guys, four maybe, that I want to see be the playmakers on this offense. If this team was supposed to be so deep, right? Zach Ertz said at the start of the season, best team he's ever been on. I don't think a team, and I hope we never find out that a team will be ever as deep as it was in 2017 when they won the Super Bowl. That, I hope, is next to impossible. Mm-hmm. But the first, like, ring of talent, like the top of the depth chart, especially in receivers, are they really that impacted by DeSean Jackson not being there? Like, should it be this bad where they can't even catch? I understand that an offense might have to shift away from a deep threat to that 15-yard offense that we talked about. But not even being able to catch the football? Like, that's not on DeSean Jackson. I understand you might not be as open as you like, but that DeSean Jackson being hurt shouldn't affect whether or not Nelson Agholor can catch a football.
And it's so not what I want to hear come Monday morning. They didn't have Amari Cooper, and look what happened.
Yeah, right.
You know, all of a sudden, Jason Witten went for 100 yards. Trayvon Austin, all of a sudden, you know, he's a guy who had 6, 7, 8 catches. Why can't Philly do that? Why can't, you know, the Eagles do that? That's what scares me about Amari Cooper not being in Dallas's lineup, that other guys will feed still.
So here's the frustration that we had yesterday with Jalen Ramsey. And just let's go around the horn real quick. I would have done the deal, 2 firsts and a 4. For Jalen Ramsey, I would have done if that was the offer by the Rams, which obviously it was. I would have even gone to 2 firsts and a 3. I would have even went up to say, all right, well, I'll give you 3.
Yeah, I would have done it.
Bob
and
Jamie Lynch.
Done.
Dunzo. So Josina Anderson last night puts out this tweet. It was the first thing I saw this morning when I woke up.
Same with me.
And I saw
10:08 last night.
10:08 last night.
Yeah,
Josina Anderson.
Late night texting.
A player tells me on Jalen Ramsey going to the Rams. "Quote: We dropped the ball. I don't even want to talk about that ish. I'll substitute a word. You're welcome. Everybody knew what it was going to take to get him. I could have told you that." So frustration in the locker room that they didn't instantly make their team better, and the early speculation is that it was Alshon Jeffrey. Now, that's from Lynch's leaks over there, who's dry snitching on his boy, I guess.
Well, if you look at Josina's Eagles reporting over the last 3 years, it's there's one name that keeps popping up on her reports.
Putting the pieces together when it comes to Alshon Jeffrey.
Well, because Alshon, he's only guaranteed here through next year.
We have someone else speculating that it was Malcolm Jenkins who texted.
Malcolm may only have next year as well.
Oh, there we go.
There's a lot of guys that are sitting around, particularly the veterans, going, why aren't we doing that?
Like, everyone,
because I don't give a damn about the 2021 first round pick.
Man, if that leaks that it was Malcolm Jenkins, though,
I'd be shocked.
you're talking about your own brethren there?
I'd be shocked.
Well, I mean, like, look.
Talk about a locker room. Spicy.
Yeah, right?
You don't have to be a professional football player to understand workplace environments.
Yeah.
Like, everyone knows the guy who's really terrible at his job.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, by the way, Tommy's going to be on your team today. Oh, come on. Oh,
damn it.
He's going to be in your group. working on that presentation we have due to the client next week.
Tommy!
Tommy's not going to do anything. He's not going to carry his weight.
At least give me Ken. Ken's good. Ken knows, like, PowerPoint.
I don't know what they use for presentation.
He can jam a guy at the line of scrimmage.
That's not helpful in this presentation, Eric. Like, I don't know. But you know what I'm saying? Like, the fact that this goes in the locker room, you said it wouldn't come out in the media, but it would be talked about amongst the players.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows that you had an opportunity to make your team instantly better going into Dallas, and that's not going to be the case for this team.
Oh, yeah.
Instead, we're telling you Jalen Mills is going to come back and Ronald Darby.
Yeah, hey, so get excited. Yeah, but that's tough, man, because I know all the players are like, oh, yeah, man, hey, dog, we got a chance to get Rams. We got to get. Wait, what just happened? Wait, whoa. He went to the Rams? Why? What did we not do here?
Mm. You didn't get him. That's what happened.
Didn't get him. I know everybody else is looking at, I mean, dude, we got 3 first rounders. Mm. How many first rounders we have next year? Two?
Two first rounders.
Yeah, two first rounders, third rounder, sorry.
Yeah, two thirds.
Two thirds, two fourths, most likely based on compensatory formula.
One first rounder, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, my bad. Yeah, so you have the first round, but the deal was 2 first rounders, so this year, next year.
Right.
And then it was the next year's fourth.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have been like, hey, oh, yeah, man, you can have our 2 first rounders, and you can have one of this year's third or fourth.
What would you like to have?
Which one would you want?
Yeah.
But Come on.
As Bob pointed out, those GMs are best friends.
And draft day would suck when you don't have your fourth round pick. But then I'd be like, oh, wait, we have Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about quarterback exactly. for the next 7 years.
Because you haven't drafted one since Lito Shepard in the first
amazing.
Round.
That's amazing. Lito was what?
2000.
I was going to say maybe 12 years ago?
Yeah, I think he was 2004, so I'm like, I was just looking at this.
Wow, even longer. Yeah. Like 15 years ago?
Yeah.
That's all gross.
Do they know it's a passing league and cornerbacks are pretty important these days?
Well, you get the feeling that they do know it's a passing league, but it's like, why try to stop it? Like, they're going to do it. Why not?
We beat Brady anyway.
How'd they win a Super Bowl? They outscored a team.
They're damn
right.
They didn't
stop it. They outscored it.
Don't
you say it.
They might have even...
Come on, man. Stop that.
Don't do it.
Possibly. Say something to the caller.
Possibly. They could have maybe outdueled another team. I said it. Deal with it. There, how about that? Put that in your pipe.
So Bob's saying they're going to go get AJ Green. That's cool.
Put that in your hat, Trey. Tyree, Northeast Philly. What's going on there, Tyree?
My bad, Tyree. Lito Shepard was 2002.
I was about to say that, Trey. He was 22. And I was having this conversation the other day. When was the last time that he was drafted a good cornerback, or when was the last time that they drafted a good linebacker?
Yeah.
I think, and then not only that, how come we keep giving Malcolm Jenkins passes? Like, I love Malcolm Jenkins. I love everything that he does. But at the end of the day, when we go into the press conference and the first thing you say out your mouth is, that was my fault.
No. Tyree, I don't want to hear that because I have not given that man a pass. I have pointed out multiple times.
No, you have. But I listen all day and I never hear, like, I love Malcolm Jenkins. I love.
We all love Malcolm.
I love both our safeties, but what was going on in there? There's a couple plays in that game that just irritate me with our safeties because, you know, if you have
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.